This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. It is, of course, Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury, joined in the studio by
Christine Wong
and Audrey Raj.
As usual, with you all the way through until 1 p.m. this afternoon. If you want to get in touch with us, you can get us on Twitter at BFM Radio or via WhatsApp on 018-789-8899. We've got a bit of a nature theme starting off the show today.
Well, not for me, but yeah, just to start off the show.
You've got the opposite of a nature theme. We're starting off with how species identifying AI gets a boost from images snapped by citizen naturalists. Then we have how innovators are tackling humanity's biggest problems by seeking solutions from studying nature.
Yep.
That's a big long sentence too. And then Audrey's non-nature story, the man who was fired by a machine.
Yeah, I like to keep it simple. Yeah.
Sounds like an H.G. Wells novel or something. Story number four, young people still love Twitter as screenshots of Instagram.
Yes.
Story number five. In the future, potholes could be repaired by asphalt printing drones.
Yes, and this is the solution to all of KL's pothole problems. Yay.
Right. So someday we'll have an app that you can point at a weird bug or unfamiliar fern and have it spit out the genus and the species. But right now, computer vision systems just aren't up to that task. To help things along, researchers have assembled hundreds of thousands of images taken by regular folks of critters in real-life situations. And by studying these, our little AI helpers may be able to get a handle on biodiversity. So many computer vision algorithms have been trained on one of several large sets of images, which may have everything from people to household objects to fruits and vegetables in them, which is great for learning a little about a lot of things. But what if you want to go deep on specific subjects or a type of image? You need a special set of lots of that kind of image, right?
Right, okay.
So for some specialties, we have that already. FaceNet, for instance, is the standard set for learning how to recognize or replicate faces. While computers may have trouble recognizing faces, we rarely do. So the problem is there's a little app out called the iNaturalist app. You may have heard about this.
Mm-hmm.
It's been collecting pictures of common and uncommon animals for identification. And it turns out that these images are the perfect way to teach a system how to recognize plants and animals in the wild. So the iNaturalist app, how it works, you snap a picture of something you see out and about. It then gets uploaded to a database. A bunch of naturalists somewhere around the world will then download that image, try and identify it for you, tell you what it is, put the identification back in the database, and that is then stored for somebody else who might see that same thing at the same angle as you have done.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right? The problem is, of course, everybody might see these bugs or plants in different lights, in different angles, in different places, so it becomes very difficult to kind of identify what it is.
Okay.
So a bunch of researchers from Caltech, Google, Cornell, and iNaturalist itself have put together a limited subset of more than 1.6 million images.
Into
the app's database.
For AI, it is.
For AI, it's almost nothing. So what they've done is they've kind of narrowed all of that down, and they ended up with 859,000 pictures of over 5,000 species from all different angles. So they had people annotate by drawing boxes around the things in the picture, so the computer would know what to pay attention to. So, example, if this little bug has antenna, they drew antenna around it. If it had 12 legs, they drew it around all the individual legs. If it was a plant and it had a specific type of stamen or leaf, they would identify that. So it became much simpler for the AI to kind of look through and go, yeah, it's this, tick. And instead of us uploading that image and waiting for somebody to come back and tell us, yep, it's this, or no, it's not, the little AI bot comes back and says, bing, bing, this is what it is.
My question is, can't Google Lens do something like this already?
Not yet.
It also depends, because occasionally Google, with Google Images and stuff, you can reverse image search a picture as well. But let's say you have like a green bug on a green background, it's not going to be able to identify that bug, for example. So this might be interesting to get like the outline of the bug, and then you can identify it from there, And it would be really good for those like tip of your tongue moments where like you see like a plant and you really want to explain what that plant is, but maybe you've like forgotten the word for it in English and you know only the word for it in Malay, and then you're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then you put it in the app and you can explain what it is.
It's been quite interesting recently. You know, I've been exposed to an awful lot of plants and stuff. And recently it's been like, this is called that. And I'm like, no, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not. Yes, it is. You know, one of those kind of discussions. And of course, like you say, Chris, things are called something here, and they're called something different elsewhere.
Yes.
And it gets very confusing.
And I guess it's always good to have the scientific name to, you know,
to prove that you're right or that you're wrong. Yes, it's one of those wonderful things. But I think this is a great idea. And the idea that we've spoken about AI being able to identify stuff and using these huge amounts of data to actually, you know, come to an accurate result. You know, we speak about China and how they're collecting this huge amount of data, and we're saying, no, it's all for evil. This is a good example of that, right?
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to story number two then. Sticking along with nature, this is something called biomimicry.
Yeah, so it's not a new concept by any means, but biomimicry is the study of living systems for clues to create human designs that are better for both people and the planet, and a lot of innovators are starting to catch on. Just to run through a few examples of how this has already been used in things that already exist, there are bullet trains in Japan that have been inspired by kingfisher birds.
Oh, cool.
So the way the kingfisher birds enter the water at a high speed, they've mimicked the way that their beak looks for bullet trains in Japan. They've also done things like they've also modeled antimicrobial film mimicking shark skin. They've also done harvesting water like a beetle in the desert. So a lot of people are now jumping on this train of thought where you kind of let nature, you know, what nature's proven to work for you, and then you mimic that, you know, with your interventions.
Innovations.
Innovations and inventions. Now, biomimicry
She's
is
making words up again.
I do that a lot. Biomimicry is actually another made-up word, but it was popularized by writer and biologist Janine Benyus in her 1977 book, Biomimicry, Innovation Inspired by Nature. And I have this little list of five things that you might want to do if it's something that interests you and you want to become a biomimicry innovator.
Or a biomimicrist.
A biomimica?
That would work. Yeah.
You could also just say a biomimic, I think, grammatically.
Yeah.
Not the point. The point is, the first step to becoming a biomimicry innovator is to work across disciplines. So chances are most chemists, engineers, industrial designers, or architects have never sat down with each other, let alone with a biologist, to problem solve. So instead of sticking within professional silos, biomimicry requires a completely interdisciplinary approach, which forces people to think differently, and the result is pure innovation magic. The second step is to link up with the community, because especially if you want to approach this as an entrepreneur, it's not an easy road. And pioneering new approaches to complicated sustainability issues is even more difficult. Much like in nature, where there are hundreds of examples of different species working together in mutually beneficial ways, innovators do not get far alone. So you can actually connect with fellow biomimics is actually the word.
Hey. Well done, Audrey. You get 10 points. and a gold star.
Through the Biomimicry Global Network, which has more than 35 groups, each working to teach, practice, and share nature-inspired design in their home regions. Number three is to get support to bring your idea to market. So there's actually a specific biomimicry launchpad, which is a training ground for early stage or pre-commercial teams looking to get support in building a bio-inspired company that contributes to the greater social and environmental good. It offers a biomimicry training, mentorship, networking, exposure to strategic partners, and opportunities to showcase breakthrough innovations to the media and the public. So that's really cool. Number four, learn how to ask nature. So if you're curious about how to begin researching and applying nature's design strategies, you can check out Ask Nature, which is actually a free online catalog of biological strategies and the ideas they've inspired. You can search by function as well, like for example, how does nature create color? And find examples of how different organisms accomplish that function, along with any related nature-inspired design solutions. And the fifth one is, of course, to get outside. You can't really mimic the biological ecosystem if you don't know what's happening in it. So you can immerse yourself in nature, get away from your screens, go outside, and look at the world in a different way. That tree in your backyard, for example, you may have appreciated it for its beauty or for how it provides a shady spot for you to nap in, but realizing that it's actually an energy-producing, carbon-sequestering, network-communicating marvel of engineering will make you see it in a whole new light. Once you start seeing nature as something to learn from and something to support rather than exploit, your innovation will never be the same, and neither will your walks outside.
Oh.
Take the iNaturalist app with you when you go outside as well.
Yes.
Two birds, one stone.
Yes.
Yeah?
You can identify things and then you can learn from them.
That's a good idea.
Woo!
I didn't realize that the bullet trains were designed after the Kingfisher. That's really interesting.
Basically, at first they weren't. So at first they were just designed with purely physics in mind, and then they were like, how can we? Essentially, I think there was a huge noise disturbance where they were really bothering as it was going through tunnels with the kind of pressure from coming out of a smaller space. They were really creating a noise disturbance around the areas. So they had to figure out how to get it faster and smoother, and then they studied nature, found the Kingfisher, so on and so forth.
Learn something new every day.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right, we have to take a very short break. Of course, you are listening to Enterprise BizBytes. When we get back, we'll be talking all about the man who was fired by a machine. That's Audrey's story, and she's very happy about this one. I know she is. She got very excited when she was telling us about this. Anyway, don't go anywhere, folks. We've got some music coming right up. We'll be back after these messages. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Because feelings matter. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. You're listening to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. As usual, I'm joined in the studio by
Christine Wong
and Audrey Raj.
With you all the way through until 1 p.m. this afternoon. We started off today's show with a story about the iNaturalist app, how they're getting a huge amount of data so they can help identify stuff. And one day you'll be able to point at something, go, what is that? And it'll be able to tell you. Chris was then telling us about how innovators are looking at nature and taking inspiration from that to create some of the biggest problems that we have in today's society and in our world. Now, speaking about problems within our world, a man who was fired by a machine. It sounds fascinating.
Doesn't it sound like a Stephen King novel?
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah.
First world problems. All right, so first his key card failed and he assumed that it was a time for him to replace it. But so began a sequence of events that saw Mr. Ibrahim Diallo fired from his job, not by his manager, but by a machine.
Oh, no.
So the story of Mr. Diallo's sacking by machine began when his entry pass into his LA building where his office was based failed to work, forcing him to rely on the security guard to let him enter. As soon as he got to his floor, he went to see his manager to let her know. She promised to, you know, get him a new key card, right? Then he noticed that he was logged out of his work system. And then a colleague told him that the word inactive was listed alongside his name.
Uh-oh.
And then the day got worse. After lunch and a 10-minute wait for one of his colleagues to let him back into his office, he was told by his recruiter that she had received an email saying that his contract was terminated. But, you know, she said she'll sort out the problem. The next day, he had been locked out of every single system at his workplace. And then after lunch, two people showed up at his desk and they told him that they received an email calling for him to be escorted out of the building. So his boss was really confused, but, you know, they told Mr. Diallo, you know, I think you're going to have to go home. And the boss also said, Mr. Diallo said that I was fired. There was nothing my manager could do about it. There was nothing the director of the company could do about it. They just stood powerless there as I packed my stuff and I left the building. So over the next...
What is happening?
Yes, what's going on, right? So his boss doesn't know what's going on. The director of the company doesn't know what's going on. And over the next 3 weeks, he was copied into emails about his case, right? And he watched as it was escalated to bigger and more powerful titles over and over. Yet no one could do anything about his termination. And from time to time, they would attach a system email that would say, disable this, disable that, revoke access here, revoke access there, escort out of premise, etc. And so this was, he was just, you know, he was just in tatters, lah.
Yeah.
Basically. So it took Mr. Diallo's bosses 3 weeks to find out why he had been sacked.
Okay.
His firm was going through changes, both in terms of the systems they were using and the people they employed. His original manager had recently been laid off and told to work from home for the rest of his contract. And in that period, he had not renewed Mr. Diallo's contract.
It slipped through the net.
Yes, and into the new system. So once one box was not ticked, the whole system then was designed to kick Mr. Diallo out. Aww. And after that, machines took over, flagging him as an ex-employee. And that's why he basically couldn't log into any of the systems because to the entire system, he was no longer an employee. So Mr. Diallo was allowed back to work, but he had missed out on 3 weeks' worth of pay and had been escorted out from the building like a thief, in inverted commas,
right,
is what he felt like he was treated like a thief. And he had to explain his disappearance to others and to his co-workers, and he found that they had become distant over what had happened because it's always, people somehow feel feel there's two sides to a story, right?
Yep, yep.
And so he decided to move jobs. That was just a horrific experience for this man, you know?
But it seems really scary that the kind of straw that broke the camel's back was somebody forgot to
mark a tick box. Yes.
Why is it then, you know, logically, his boss couldn't have gone back and just gone, okay, I missed that ticket. You know, the new boss, why couldn't they have done that?
I feel like it's because the whole process must have been automated in some way. So, like, the moment that one box was unticked, it just set off a chain reaction of probably some sort of processes within the system where they were like, okay, he's already not an employee, let's just do everything immediately. Mm. So there wasn't even enough time to go back and rectify the mistake, because it probably, by the time they got to it, I think the whole system had basically booted him out already.
Right.
So, I mean, this is one of those cases where in many ways automation makes jobs a lot easier, but you have to be so careful, and this is why we can't just rely solely on technology to do jobs that sometimes humans have to do, number one. Number two, we have to double check everything. Double check everything. When you're working with technology, like if anyone has ever been in an ICT class, your teacher should have told you to save all the time. Save everything all the time, you know? So it's one of those things where it's such a careless, you know, little slip in judgment or, you know, just something that was missed so slightly ended up in literally life-changing consequences for this guy.
Mm.
I feel really bad for this man, but then I can also understand what it's like to work in a big company that's saturated with employees. And, you know, when you have to fire someone, you're going to have to revoke access to the main entrance, onto the floor, onto the department. Then you're going to have to that electronic attendance check.
Yeah.
Then you've got your tag in, tag out, your lunchtime, your the end of the day. All these things are done automatically today. Mm. And so if someone actually had to go through and like revoke access for all these things manually, it just seems a bit, well, tedious for someone to kind of do it on a daily basis for people who are retrenched. And imagine if you work in a company which had thousands of employees. So I understand why they had automation set for this, but it's just unfortunate that something like this could happen to someone. It's just an unfortunate series of events.
I wonder if he's the first... The first guy for this to have happened to. It seems like the way in which it happened and the series of events happened, it seemed like this could have happened to almost anybody.
Yes.
And,
oh, yeah.
And surely more than one person by the sounds of it.
You know? I really hope that, you know, with other systems that, you know, handle that kind of human resources, you know, stuff, that there will be some sort of fail safe that you could do to override the system if it does make a mistake like that.
Mm. And not wait 3 weeks for that.
Mm. Okay, we're going to wrap up and move on. We're going to have a bit of a short break with some music coming up here on Biz Bytes. Do join us after the break when we come back. It's all about young people who still love Twitter as screenshots on Instagram. That's a story coming up after these messages. You're listening to BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Best for money. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9 at the Business Station. You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio by
Audrey Raj
and Christine Wong.
As usual, with you all the way through until 1 o'clock. We've had species identifying AI that gets a boost from images snapped by citizen naturalists.
You can just say biomimicry for the next one.
Then we had biomimicry. Then we had electromimicry firing. A man who was fired by a machine over in the States. Moving on to story number 4 about how, I love the descriptor of this. Young people still love Twitter. It sounds like Twitter going, we're still relevant. Tell us about this, Chris.
Yeah, so this is something that I've actually noticed myself on social media. So I wanted to talk about this. The Pew Research Center, recently reported that fewer teenagers than ever are using platforms like Facebook, Twitter, or Tumblr. But that doesn't mean that younger users are finished with the content from those sites altogether. And this is something that I found really weird. So Instagram, which is, of course, still hugely popular as a place to post glossy, aspirational images of your vacation or a top-down look at your coffee or gratuitous selfies. I mean, I'm not guilty, whatever, it's fine. It's grown into a home away from home to consume screenshots of the best content from places like Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr.
Yeah.
Which is very confusing, because you would expect that if you want the content from that social network platform, you would go on that platform. But this is not the case. So Corey Amara Hartwig is a New York-based 22-year-old who runs an account called at Manic Pixie Meme Queen. And this is a meme Instagram account. And she said that Instagram and Twitter are the only social media platforms that matter, especially to millennials. So for her, Instagram's image-first identity is suited to meme culture, quote-unquote, which she says thrives and connects more easily because they lend themselves to be shared as a full image with the text of the meme actually attached to the image itself. So basically what it is that because memes tend to be visual in nature, ironically, even though, you know, it might be a, it might be in the form of a text post on Twitter or Tumblr, it actually shares better as a text post in an image on Instagram.
Right. Mm.
So by the very nature of what a meme is, which is just, you know, a thing that goes viral for some reason or another, it's bizarre because now you have memes that, you know, don't even go viral on the platforms that they were created on.
Yeah.
So for some meme creators, Twitter and Tumblr are more of a canvas and Instagram is the wall where they display their work. And one interesting thing as well is that a lot of these creators don't even just aggregate the content. They will create content on Twitter, for example, and then screenshot that to put on their Instagram. And just because you have success on the one platform also doesn't necessarily cross over onto others.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really interesting because it really shows the difference in what succeeds on which platform. And it's something that I think a lot of people tend to misunderstand about social right. media, you know?
I follow a guy who goes on by the name of Elliot Tabell.
Mm-hmm.
His Instagram handle is F swear word Jerry.
Okay.
And he has 13.6 million followers. And the majority of his posts on Instagram are borrowing content from Twitter or from, you know, Amazon reviews and all that kind of stuff. And he just reposts them.
Yeah.
You know, and he has 13.6 million views. He's not even creating content. He's yeah. just, you know, repurposing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have, I follow, I can't remember what his handle is, but it's Captain something, Captain SGT or something. And he just has like a funny quirks that
right.
is actually literally just pulled off Twitter and posted on his Instagram account. And he has thousands of likes
yeah.
every single day.
Yeah.
And I look forward to those posts every day
yeah,
as well.
Right.
So I guess, you know, it never occurred to me that it was meant for another social media site and then it was being repurposed on Instagram. I just consumed it without realizing it, and yet I enjoy it.
Yeah. And for me personally as well, it's something that I realize I do, not on Instagram, but on Facebook, because I used to be quite active on Tumblr back in the day. I'm no longer very active on Tumblr just because I don't have time to endlessly scroll through my dashboard. But I've been following some Facebook pages that do repost content from Tumblr, and I repost that content to my own Facebook timeline. And it was something that I didn't even realize I was doing, but I just was like, here's a funny thing, I want to share it. And it never occurred to me that it was content from another platform on a different platform.
Mm.
So it's just a weird way that, you know, I think, you know, with the advent of the internet, sometimes there are some weird trends that you just don't notice until it's been pointed out to you so obviously. So, you know, I was really fascinated when I read this article on The Verge.
I think it's really, really interesting. But it's the idea of not, I think it's like people are covering all of their bases, isn't it? Because they're not sure where the audience is. So people like F. Jerry or Elliot, whatever his name is, you know, he's just, I'll take it from there, I'll post it there, I know I'm going to get likes there. I might get some on Twitter, but I'm definitely going to get them on Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, because that's the kind of crowd that I'm catering to.
Really fascinating stuff.
Mm.
I think it's just smart. You're repurposing your work.
Yeah, right.
For sure.
Okay, time to take a short break. Music coming up, as usual. When we get back, final story of the day. In the future, potholes could be repaired by asphalt printing drones.
Yes.
This sounds like something that should be on Geek Scorecards.
Yes, but it also is something that all the city councillors and municipals out there, you know, please listen up.
Music coming up here on BizBytes on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. It is Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I've got the lovely ladies of
Christine Wong
and Audrey Raj.
Almost time for us to wrap up, but as usual, we've got one more story. It is, in the future, potholes could be repaired by asphalt printing drones.
I want this next week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So researchers from the UK have proposed an unorthodox approach to pothole repairs in which cameras equipped with image recognition technology constantly scan the streets for developing flaws, dispatch a drone to the site, and then use an onboard 3D printer to patch the hole with asphalt. Awesome, right?
Genius.
Amazing.
Yes. Why didn't we think of this earlier? So the concept is part of a larger multi-university project looking at the possibility of self-repairing cities and how robotics and other automated systems could be used to aid with repairs so as to cut down on disruptive road closures and other street works. So while it might sound a little overkill to use drones, image recognition and 3D printing for a simple repair job.
I think it's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think
makes sense.
Any one of us who drives on KL roads will think that this is a winner, right?
Genius.
So what happens is, what these researchers from the University of Leeds, what they say is, when you look at inventions in infrastructure, whether it's roads, pipes, bridges, or similar inventions, you're very often using ton and meter scale solutions for problems that started out as gram and millimeter scale defects. So, you know, I'm sorry, that just won the argument for me already. So in the case of potholes, that means that what begins as a tiny coin-sized dents in the road can quickly grow in size as the result of weather and repeated vehicular activity.
Right.
And by using smart technology like this, the researchers think that this problem can be nipped in the bud early on so as to avoid later problems. You know, huge potholes and sinkholes like we've experienced on KL Road. So I think... these guys, these researchers from the University College of London and the University of Leeds, they have built a hybrid aerial ground vehicle for transportation. It is capable of extruding asphalt with 1 millimeter accuracy. So basically, they scan the roads with facial recognition.
I guess topographical recognition.
Yeah,
and then after that, they dispatch a drone that has a 3D printer on board, and they just patch up those tiny holes that, if left untouched up, would have resulted in a pothole in a week or even in a month.
Now, you see, that could all happen whilst we're all sleeping.
Yeah.
This could all happen and we'd not even know about it. We wake up the next morning, we're like, the pothole has gone.
Yeah.
Just done like that.
We may never, ever see potholes again.
This
in
is
a world
genius.
If this
without
becomes
reality. Potholes.
This
yeah,
is genius.
Exactly.
And now you you would also create a world where Domino's doesn't have to fill in your potholes for you.
Correct.
Just saying.
Yeah. And they did you see that?
No, I didn't.
They've got what?
Okay, so I think this is in the US. But Domino's actually went ahead and started filling up potholes in certain towns in the US to protect their pizza.
Because
protect their pizza?
Because the local council were not doing their job good enough. So Domino's went, you know what? We'll do it.
Because, so the theory is when you deliver a pizza, you might go across a pothole. And when you go across a pothole, then it jumps and then the pizza box and then everything is messy and the cheese is gone and it's sad.
Right.
So they filled up the potholes and then stuck their logo on the potholes like, yes, Domino's fix this.
Yeah, well, you know, with this, if the people from the University of Leeds and the University College of London, if they can make this a successful, process business system, then I think we can leave the pizza making to Domino's, right?
Good, yes. Yeah. Right, it's time for us to wrap up, ladies and gents. But don't forget, we will be back again, same time, same place, tomorrow at noon. We'll quickly run through the stories that we covered today, though, and in case you missed any part of the show. Don't forget, you can download the app and listen back to the podcast at your leisure. We started out with how a app called iNaturalist has been using AI to get images. No, I'll start again. How iNaturalist has been looking at images that people have given to it, and then it's fed that to AI, and now very soon it'll be able to identify things for you. Oh my word, that was difficult.
Yes, and then we discussed how innovators are going more and more towards biomimicry, and 5 ways that if you're interested in biomimicry, you can get involved too.
And then there was my simple story about the man who was fired by a machine, all because someone forgot to untick a box or tick a box. Simple.
My word.
As that.
Yes, and then we talked about how young people still love Twitter, but as screenshots on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, in the future, hopefully soon, next week, please, potholes could be repaired by asphalt printing drones.
That's all the time that we have for today, but don't forget, coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it is the Breakfast Grill replay. It is a biggie. You're not going to want to miss this. Make sure you stay tuned. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. My name is Rich Bradbury on behalf of Christine Wong and Audrey Raj.
Audrey Raj.
Yes, this has been Enterprise Biz Bites on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.